Luke chapter 15 is where we're at this morning, and he's going to give us really, well, it depends on how you look at it. Some people say there are three parables in this chapter. Some people say there's one parable with three examples. Well, okay, you pick what you like, and you'll see why they say that in just a moment here. Then drew near unto Jesus, unto him, the tax collectors and other sinners to listen to him. Let me read the King James. Then drew near unto him all the publicans and sinners for to hear him. That means publicans are tax collectors among other kinds of sinners. You see, the tax collectors and other various sorts of sinners, you'd see some prostitutes, and you'd see, for instance, you remember a lady who had been married five times, and the man she was living with at this time wasn't her husband, and you could see there were some problem areas in their lives, and they were considered sinners. So tax collectors and sinners, those who were thought of as hopeless. All right, now you've been a Christian for a while, some of you. If you're not careful, you've probably thought about people like that. Or some of them are just hopeless. Look at their lifestyles, and they are so hooked on drugs, or they are so this, or they're so that. They're hopeless. That's what the Pharisees thought. Tax collectors and other sinners like them. They are hopeless sinners. And they drew near to Jesus, the Bible says. And of course, the Pharisees and the scribes complained about it. They murmured. And you'd expect that. They're holy. They murmured and said, "This man receives sinners and even eats with them." The King James and the Pharisees and scribes murmured, saying, "This man receiveth sinners and eateth with them." I was just reading a story yesterday. A little girl walked up to the pastor and she said, "Thank you this morning for letting me know my name is in the Bible." And he goes, "Oh, that's neat. What's your name?" She said, "Edith." He said, "I don't think your name is in the Bible." She said, "You read it this morning. Jesus, this man receives sinners and eateth with them." No, Edith has had a T in there. Edith. That means he ate with them. And the Pharisees complained about that. And so Jesus heard the complaining, and this is what he said. He spoke unto them this parable. He says, "What man of you, having 100 sheep, if he lose one of them, does not leave the 99 in the wilderness and go after that which is lost until he find it?" Jesus said that the house of Israel, he saw them as lost sheep. But he says, let's say you had 100 of them and 99 are right out here and you've got your eye on them, but you notice one is missing. He says, which one of you wouldn't go after? Leave the 99 and go after the one. What's his point, everybody? His point is this: the tax collectors and these other so-called sinners were just as important as the Pharisees. Notice that? Of course, he saw the Pharisees as lost sheep as well. It's just that the Pharisees didn't see themselves that way. Key. To understanding you and me. We have to understand. We have to see ourselves a certain way. We have to know where we're at. We have to admit or understand that we are lost. And that we just don't want to say that. You talk to an American average adult who really wants to be seen as intelligent, and you say, "You're headed for hell. You don't understand where you're going." They look at you and say, "I'm not headed for hell. I don't even believe in hell. I don't need your Jesus." You see, that's how proud we are. We have to first be willing to admit that we're lost. That takes humility. That takes the power of the Holy Spirit to show me you're lost. Well, Jesus says, which one of you, having 100 sheep, if you lose one of them, does not leave the 99 in the wilderness? Now I'm going to tell you something. And this is going to sound cold to you, but oh well. You like the cold weather. I'm telling you right now, if you're out there sinning up a storm, robbing banks, raping and pillaging, and you call yourself a Christian, and others say, "There's one of our lost sheep," I go, "Yeah, lost sheep, all right." I'm telling you right now, he's not talking about those that are his who just want to backslide and sin. He's talking about those who are lost. He's going to go get them. If he has to keep coming after you, and you say you're his, You may not know this, but what a shepherd will do to one of those kind of sheep is will break their legs. A shepherd will literally break the legs of a sheep who is rebellious and backsliding. What does it do? Well, then it can't wander off. Interesting, huh? And while the sheep has broken legs, he can't get to his food as well. And so the shepherd hand feeds that sheep. What do you think is going to happen when that sheep's legs are now finally well again? That sheep's going to remember where his food comes from, where it's fine, and chances are good. Almost 100%, that sheep won't wander again. Just a little bit of pain, just a little bit of suffering in the lives, just a little bit of trying of being purified by the fire. So don't misunderstand what's being talked about here. We're talking about sheep that are lost, not sheep that are rebellious and want to keep on going to the edge to see what's over the edge. And then when they fall, well, brother, what we better do is let God handle them. You notice, when he found the sheep that has been lost, he lays it on his shoulders. When Jesus saves your life, you come to Jesus. He doesn't just say, all right, walk, fool. Come on now. Come on back. I know you're tired. I know you're wounded. I know you're cut up, but you come on. No, he carries the sheep. Read Isaiah chapter 40. He shall feed his flock like a shepherd. You know, he's going to carry them in his arm. Put him over his shoulders. By the way, if you go back and look at the high priest garb, what the high priest would wear, on one shoulder were stones representing six of the tribes. On the other shoulder were stones representing the other six tribes. What does that mean? That the high priest carries Israel on his shoulders. Who is the high priest? Jesus Christ. He carries you and I. Well, anyway, when he's found it, he lays it on his shoulders, rejoicing. There's a key word. Now notice, he's happy. And when he comes home, he calls together his friends and neighbors and saying unto them, rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep, which was lost. Where does he take the sheep, everybody? Understand the parable. Where is he taking the sheep? Home. You got to think about it. Who do you think is the shepherd that's being referred to here in this parable? Jesus. And where do you think Jesus is going to take the sheep that are his? Home. And where do you think home is? Right. Jersey. Sure. No, where do you think home might be? Home might be heaven, mightn't it? I think. And he calls his friends together. Now, I'm not making too much out of this, but I want you to still study it yourself. Who do you think Jesus' friends are? If you go to John, read through the Gospel of John, he says, I call you friends. I no more call you servants, I call you friends. Who is he talking to? Just the 12? Just the 11? No, all those who are truly his. Isn't that true? We don't deserve it. But he calls you a friend. He calls his friends together. I think that's interesting. And so he says, so let me put it in plain English, or plain Greek, or plain whatever you speak. I say unto you, likewise, joy shall be in heaven over one sinner that repents more than 99 just persons who think they don't need to repent. Now, did you hear what he just said? Joy shall be in heaven. Now, I like to ask you, because a lot of people think only the angels are rejoicing. Who's in heaven? Right now. If you were to come to Jesus Christ today, who is in heaven? Well, I think the Old Testament saints are with the Lord. I think most of the body of Christ, I believe, is already in heaven. So do you understand that those of you that have relatives that are in heaven, when you come to Jesus Christ, they party there. I know you're thinking, oh, they went on and they probably... I wish my grandmother would be here to know that she prayed for me all those years. She knows. He calls all his friends together and they rejoice that that lost sheep was found. Your grandmother knows. So does that old pastor that you used to deal with who kept praying for you and he kept hoping that you'd straighten out and you just kept wandering. And he knows. So does Peter. And James and John, they know, and they are thrilled, and they are clapping their hands, and they're partying. I know they're killing a fatted calf. That comes next. And they're going to do that, man. He says, or here, he says, how about this one? Either what woman has having 10 pieces of silver, if she lose one piece, doesn't light a candle, sweep through the entire house, and seek diligently to find that coin she lost? You know, we don't know what kind of coin he's talking about. If it's the kind of coin that some people talk about, it's worth over a day's wages. So it would have been terrible to lose. But also, the women were given by the groom. They were given a necklace that went around their head with 10 coins on it. And it was worth a lot of money. And it was kind of like more important than a wedding ring. And they would have that. And it would have 10 coins. And if one of those happened to break off and roll across the floor and you couldn't find it, she would not want that to be lost. So either way, whichever kind of coin it was, I want you to know the point of the parable, it emphasizes the thoroughness of the search. Do you see what she does to find it? Not only is the one sheep lost, he goes after the one, but next, there is a real thoroughness of the search that's involved of this lost. They're going to look until they find it. Interesting, huh? And when she has found it, she calls her friends, notice again, and neighbors together, saying, rejoice with me, for I have found the piece which I had lost. There's another celebration. Likewise, I say unto you, there is joy in the where? In the presence of the angels. I've heard it taught that the angels are the only ones rejoice when someone gets saved. But you notice there's joy in the presence of the angels as well. That means who else is rejoicing? Everybody in heaven. That means those people that were praying for you. Those people who you thought, well, man, I'll say it again. I wish so-and-so were here to know that I finally came to the Lord. They know. And they are thrilled about it. They are more excited than you will ever know until you get there and they talk to you. That's what the Bible teaches. And then he said this. He says, likewise, I say to you, there is joy in the presence of the angel of God over one sinner that repents. You come to Jesus Christ, all of heaven has a party and is praising God. They're clapping their hands and they're thrilled. And you can imagine the multi-millions, billions that are there, not counting the angels. What a loud party that must be just because you have come to Jesus. You've finally been found. Well, how about this now? A certain man had two sons. I want to suggest to you that this has been called the parable of the prodigal son, but I believe it is the parable of the prodigal sons. I don't think only one son is involved. I think it starts out with two and it ends out with two, and you're going to see that both were prodigal. And I know that we don't think that way, but that's clearly what's taught here. He says, a certain man had two sons. Both of them were prodigal, by the way. The younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the portion of goods that falls to me. I want the inheritance I'm supposed to give, but I don't want to wait till you're too old. I know I'm supposed to wait until you're old and can't handle it anymore and I get mine, or until you're dead, but I want it now. I'm young. I want to have it while I can live and use it. Why give it to me when I'm old like you? It'll be a waste of money. So his dad divided unto, read it, them. How many of them got their inheritance? Both of the sons. Okay, don't misunderstand. You got to understand the parable or you'll miss it. And not many days after he got his money, the young son gathered all together, took his journey into a far country, and there wasted his substance with riotous living. What is riotous living? Well, in verse 30 or a little later on in this chapter, we're going to learn that part of riotous living meant a whole lot of strange prostitute type women. We know it meant drugs, it meant alcohol, it meant dancing and singing and partying and clubbing and doing all the things that he could do while he's got the money. And believe me, if you've got money, you've got friends. And you'll learn that when your money's gone, take a look around. I know men and women who married one another, and when the money was gone, that woman was gone. And I think, oh, there's love for you. When the money's gone, that man is history. But see, people have matured. Now they make sure they marry someone with money. They know half of it's theirs, even if the marriage only lasts 30 minutes. See, they've come a long way. You don't even have to wait now. You can take 50%. Oh, you got a house? I'll marry you. Sure, what the heck? Got nothing to lose. And you marry now, instantly half that house is mine and I want it. And here we go. So we've got this man wasting his substance, which also includes his life. And when he had spent everything, there arose a mighty famine in the land, and he began to be in need or in want. And when he joined himself, or he went, I'm sorry, so we got this big famine going on. He went and joined himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent him out to his fields to feed the pigs. Now, to work with pigs for a Jewish man or woman would have been an absolute abomination, completely detestable to the Jewish people. And Jesus was talking to Jewish, so that would have made them... Well, it would be like you taking a job as a person who reaches down into spittoons with their bare hands and cleans out the gobs. Nah, you just don't... And you try to pull it all out, but it's one lump and it just hangs together and you start to get sick. You know, you can't... It'd be like trying to lift it out and it just keeps on coming. That's detestable. That's an abomination. Somebody's been spitting in there and you got the job of pulling it out. And I suppose if you're hungry. Of course, you'd have to swallow a long time because it would be one big lump. Are you getting sick yet? You should be. That's how you would feel if Jesus said he went to work with the pigs. He went to work with pigs. The lowest of the low that you could be or be a part of in the Jewish thought pattern. And he would have eaten or filled his belly with the husks that the swine did eat, and no man would give him anything. Imagine taking the spittoon and just drinking it straight down, thinking, I am so hungry that this is all I have. And you think, that makes me sick. Yeah, that's what the Jews were feeling when Jesus was saying, they're going, oh, sick story. You are sick. Can I hang out with you? Yeah. Oh. And verse 17 shows you something that you and I should have never, ever overlooked in our Bibles. And we have overlooked it probably for the last 2,000 years. Verse 17 says, and when he came to himself. What did it just tell you? When you, Christian, are in sin, you aren't thinking right, and you do not understand what's going on inside of you or around you. And when people say, man, you're sinning, do what God says, you look at them and say, I just feel this is right, I think it's okay with the Lord, I think, see, you are a nut. You are a case. You have lost, if you had a marble, it's not there anymore. You don't know, neither do I. Anybody that's in sin right now that's a Christian, they don't even know. You talk to them and say, what are you going to do? I don't know. Pray for me. I'll pray for you. You know what God says, what are you going to do? I just can't figure this out. I'm in love with three people at the same time. One of them's me. And I just don't know what to do. Oh. But the prodigal son, after drinking from the spittoon or thinking about it, came to himself. What does that mean? His senses returned for a second. What on the earth is wrong with me? Owa tajer kayam. Say it faster. Oh, what a jerk I am. Hey, some of you are right there, right there. Have you come to yourself yet? Have you stopped and said, what am I doing? Do you know, in my Father's house, even the servants eat well, and I'm about to drink from a spittoon that someone has been spitting in for the last few years. How on the earth did I get down here from there? What am I doing? What is going on with me? Am I crazy? You are. You have lost your mind. Something has happened in your head and in your heart because you're in sin. You and I, that's the way we are. But he came to himself. He says, how many hired servants of my father's have bread enough and to spare? And I'm starving to death. I will get up and I will go to my father and I will say to my father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no more worthy to be called your son. Make me one of your hired slaves. I'm not asking to come back and be a part of the family. I have sinned so stupidly and so foolishly, but I now recognize I am so low. I'm just going to ask you to forgive me and let me be your slave the rest of my life. At least I'll be near you and I can eat. He arose and went home. But when he was still a far distance away, his father saw him. I'm telling you that according to this, and according to the first two parts of the parable you saw, the father's been looking for him every day. And look how seriously he's been looking. That woman swept the floor. She got candles out. And the father has been looking and been looking. And every day now the father is looking for his son to come home. Because a true son or daughter will come home. And he says, when he was a great way off, the father saw him and had such compassion, ran out to meet him, fell on his neck, hugged him, and kissed him. And you can imagine he smelled like spittoon. Or like the pigs. And the son said, and he's got this planned speech. Remember, this was a speech he planned. I'm going to go home and here's what I'm going to say. He said, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight, and I'm no more worthy to be called your son. But the father just wasn't paying attention. He was paying attention, but he had something to say. The father said to the servants, bring forth the best robe. What do you think the robe might be? The robe of righteousness, which might be Jesus Christ, the righteousness of Jesus Christ. Put it on him and put a ring on his hand. What would a ring represent? The rights and the power of a full-grown, mature son of the father. The rights and the complete power of a full-grown son. He would have the ring to represent the family. See, the father gave his son a new position, higher up than when he left. He says, put shoes on his feet. Bring here the fatted calf and kill it. And let's eat and have a big celebration. What do you think goes on in heaven? When a prodigal returns, or when a sheep that was lost is brought into the fold, what do you think happens in heaven? A big, joyous celebration. And he says, for this my son was dead and is alive. He was lost and is found. And they began to party. And you can party with no alcohol, with no drugs, with no strange men stripping and strange women doing weird things, popping out of cage. You can really have a big party if you got a fatted calf. I think. And you don't need to sin or get weird or get bizarre. And you can still yell and scream and laugh all you want. Because this son was dead and he's alive. He was lost and he's found. There's always a celebration. Now, let's look at the second prodigal son. Now, the elder son was in the field. He's working away. What a godly son. Who's Jesus telling the parable to, and why was the parable brought up? Because if you forget that, you're going to miss it. It was brought up because the Pharisees were murmuring. Who are the Pharisees? They're the ones that say, we're doing it right. We're working your field. We're holy. We're healthy. We're right on, man. If you say don't eat this, we don't eat it. If you say hold your nose in the air, we hold our nose in the air. We do what you say, man. We're holy. There you go. The elder son was in the field, and as he was coming home, he drew near to the house. He heard music and dancing. Haven't heard that in a long time. What's the big celebration here? He called one of the servants and asked what it meant. He said, your brother's home. And your dad has killed the fatted calf because he's received him safe and sound. He's so thrilled your brother's home. We're having a big celebration. He killed that calf, has been fatted for a long time waiting for a special event. And he was angry and wouldn't go in the house. And his dad came out, therefore, and entreated him. Very kindly says, come in. You need to come in. Your brother's home. Come and see him. And he answered and said to his father, look, I've been working for you years. I serve you and I don't transgress. I do everything I'm supposed to. He says, I've never transgressed any of your commandment. And you never gave me a kid even that I might have a party with my friends. But as soon as this your son was come, he didn't even call him my brother, he says, your son, which has devoured the living with prostitutes, well, you kill him for him the fatted calf. And his dad said to him, son, you're always with me. Everything I have is yours. Did you hear that, everybody? Did you hear that? He just told that older son, you could have had that fatted calf anytime you want. It's yours. Everything I have is yours. You never took what was rightfully yours. Oh, you may have been keeping the rules, but you never accepted or took what was rightfully yours. You know people who talk about really entering into the promises of God and they never do? He says it was necessary that we should make merry. It was the right thing to do and be glad. For this brother was dead. Your brother was dead and is alive. He was lost and he is found. Notice the older brother is just as prodigal as the younger. Only his was in his heart, so nobody really could see it. It's been there for years. He's been working in the field, probably spitting on the dirt. This is my father. I'm getting so sick of working for my father. My brother's out there partying and I'm doing this. That makes me sick. Have you ever seen Christians who didn't like it that so-and-so came to the Lord? Have you ever seen that? They also think, man, that guy's a loser. And he calls himself a Christian. He's a loser. And then he repents. And they say, well, we don't want him around anyway. We don't like it. There's the older brother. See, that's prodigal. But they're sort of working in the father's field. Many today, they haven't run off to the far country. But they're prodigal still just the same while they're working right in the father's field. You and I don't want to be that. We don't want to be prodigals in our hearts. And we don't want to be prodigals in our lives by running off. Some of you have run off. We'll share communion together now. What a great time to come back to yourself. Say, what on the earth is wrong with me? In my Father's house, that's where the party's at. In my Father's house, that's where you're safe. That's where there's plenty. That's where you want to be. What am I doing out here with this platoon? In my Father's house, that's where I belong. Even the lowest in my Father's house are doing great. What's wrong with me? What am I doing out here? I'm torturing myself. I'm beating my own head against the wall. I'm ready to eat with pigs. What on the earth is wrong? You can come to yourself. Because I'll tell you, you and me, when we're in sin, we don't see well and we aren't thinking well at all. That's why others come along to us and look at you and say, just do what God says. And you say, I can't. I just feel, here's where I'm at and here's what. Well, we're just trying to tell you, idiot, you're not seeing. It's nothing personal. We love you or we wouldn't even bring it up. Do you understand that you can be prodigal by running off or you can be prodigal by having a heart that isn't correct? The ushers are going to pass out communion to us. And so let's just hold the bread, hold the cup, and we'll take that together. Let's bow our heads.